Hello, I'm Ryan McCormick. This is number 0445, the Subfile Program, with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0445. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, you'll meet Mary Fleming, who is the manager of Molly's Irish Grill and Sports Pub in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. They created a drink that resembles a Tide Pod.
It is blue carousel. We dyed vodka orange and Bailey's. It's not orange vodka because, as any bartender would know, citrus and Bailey's will curdle right away. And I've seen a lot of that going around online. People should know you have to use regular vodka and dye it orange.
Dr. John Huber is back talking about the idea that some schools have of banning students from having best friends.
I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to get kids to broaden their horizons socially, but I think they're going about it the wrong way. I mean, we've already got problems with social media not allowing kids, for whatever reason, not actually having real personal face-to-face contact with anybody anymore, and they're losing social skills that way. Now you're going to turn around and say, you can't have a best friend. I don't see how that's going to be productive at all. That's how we learn to have a committed relationship with somebody.
Stuart Nullman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nullman, and Book Banter looks at 2018's hottest book so far, Michael Wolff's blistering look at the Trump White House called Fire and Fury. This is not fake news, and it's coming soon on the Stuff File Program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0445 was Ryan McCormick, who is the co-founder of Goldman McCormick PR, a very fine firm indeed. And by the way, one that has helped over the years, many, many years now, of supplying some of the guests that you hear here on the Stuff File Program. Thank you very much, Ryan, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make the show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? For 6 years, 41-year-old Jeffrey Wirtgen was an attorney with the U.S. Department of Justice. His job was to prosecute high-stakes corporate fraud, which gave him access to information about whistleblowers who wanted to report malfeasance by their employers. Wirtgen, who recently left the government to work at a high-end Washington, D.C. law firm, stockpiled the sealed information from such cases, including many he was not assigned to, and now admits he offered to sell the information to the companies involved, which would blow the cover of those making the reports and make government lawsuits more difficult to pursue. Wirtgen was wearing a wig and fake mustache when he tried to sell one such case file to an unnamed Silicon Valley tech company for $310,000. But the supposed company official on the other side of the table was actually an undercover FBI agent who arrested him. Wirtgen's comment upon his arrest, "My life is over." Nah, pal, you still have several lives left. Let's see. There's the life of a defendant, then the life of an inmate, and after some years, the life of a parolee. Whistle officially blown. Yeah. A woman sued her neighbor for €3,866 after she said falling objects dented the roof, body, and hood of her car. But a Frankfurt, Germany court said the damage came from a fact of nature the plaintiff had to put up with. You see, in autumn, walnuts fall from trees. Now, in order to completely rule out the danger posed by falling fruit, the court found, the only logical conclusion is the possibility of entirely cutting back the fruit-bearing tree in question or surrounding it with a safety net. The defendant had no such obligation. The plaintiff is stuck not only with her damages, but with the costs of the lawsuit. Well, perhaps the plaintiff should consider suing the tree. Oh, wait. That wouldn't work. Money doesn't grow on it. Yeah. The city of Ann Arbor, Michigan, has brought in sharpshooters to shoot hundreds of deer living in forested areas of the city, such as parks and nature areas. To give the hunters clear shots at the deer, they're cutting down trees, destroying the understory with chainsaws, and apparently with abandon, says Terry Abrams, of Friends of Ann Arbor Wildlife and Nature. And why is the city culling the deer in the first place? Because they're eating young trees, which is hindering forest regeneration and biodiversity. When city officials were asked how many trees had been cut, the reply was, they're not collecting that type of information. So, there has never been a situation more literal than this one. City officials can't see the forest for the trees.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
This is an important self-serving promotional bulletin. My book, Great Conversations, My Interviews with Two Men on the Moon and a Galaxy of Stars, is still available. And like the title says, within the pages you'll find some of my celebrity encounters with Oscar winners like Carl Malden, Cloris Leachman, and Christopher Plummer. Emmy winners like Ed Asner, Michael Moriarty, and Lindsay Wagner. Tony winners like Carol Channing and Julie Newmar. A host of TV icons, plus two guys who left their footprints on the moon. Order it now. It's available in hardcover, softcover, and for your e-reader on Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, as well as at my publisher's website at BearManorMedia.com. All links are on our website at TheStuffFile.com. So, buy the book. What are you waiting for? This has been an important self-serving promotional bulletin.
I love you. Now, back to our show.
A woman suffered serious injuries after her boyfriend pumped gas into a garbage can in their car while she was smoking a cigarette. The Grant County Sheriff's Office in the state of Washington said the woman was hospitalized with burns after her vehicle caught fire, which was caused by her companion pumping gas into a garbage can inside their car. Deputies learned that the 1988 Ford Tempo had parked at the gas pumps and the man had attempted to pump gasoline into a garbage can, which he had in the back seat. The female passenger, who was smoking a cigarette, apparently caused the fumes to ignite, engulfing the car. The woman got out of the car but sustained severe burns. The man ran from the scene on foot. After the fire was out, deputies discovered a large quantity of marijuana in the trunk of the car. You know, this is what happens when people don't have the simple skills of elementary school science. I was considering making them the idiots of the day, but I didn't. Oh, but stick around, that does come later. In the meantime, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Most sane people know that they shouldn't attempt the actual Tide Pod Challenge. That's just playing with your life. But if you like to drink the pretty colors, well, there's a place that's willing to accommodate. Molly's Irish Grill and Sports Pub in South Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, has a drink inspired by the colorful laundry detergent. But when they put the drink up online, Facebook censored it. To talk about this, we're joined by Mary Fleming, who is the manager at Molly's. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Peter.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So, first of all, tell us what this Tide Pod Challenge drink is actually made from.
Okay, well, it is blue carousel. We dyed vodka orange and Bailey's.
Okay. So, did you...
Now, it's not orange vodka because... As any bartender would know, citrus and Bailey's will curdle right away. And I've seen a lot of that going around online. People should know you have to use regular vodka and diet orange.
Ah, gotcha. Gotcha. Okay, so you've created this drink. Did you go through a lot of permutations to find, first of all, the right colors and also the right taste?
A little bit. Yeah, it didn't take too long, but there were a couple other ideas we had before the final recipe, yes.
And when did you first come up with the idea for this? Because I saw a story that was dated January 22nd, so it's a few weeks ago. When did you first come up with this?
Right. Well, the weekend it took off was the day it was created. It was that day. If it was the 22nd, I'm going to go with the 22nd. I don't remember the exact date. But we made it for a trivia night special. We had no idea it was going to take off that way. It was just something fun for a Thursday night. And we put it up on, I believe, Friday. And over the weekend, that's when we had 6.5 million views.
Wow. Okay, so you put it up on Facebook. And you got all got all these views. And then Facebook took it down, correct?
They did, mm-hmm. So we put it back up again, and we got a couple more likes and views, and then they took it down again with a stern warning saying that we can't put it up anymore. So we kind of put the Ghostbusters, slash through it, and we named it The Shot Banned by Facebook, and that just made it even more popular.
So, again, as you say, initially 6 million views on Facebook, so very, very popular online. How popular was it at your establishment, at Molly's Irish Grill and Sports Pub?
It was insane. I think that weekend we sold hundreds and hundreds of shots. We had calls all over the United States from different bartenders and just people who wanted to know how to make it and... let's see. We ran out of everything that weekend. We had no idea we'd run out of all of our vodka and Baileys and blue, so we had to go restock on that. To this day, it's still pretty popular. They're coming in all over the place just to try it. It's great advertising.
So let's talk a little bit about Molly's. Give us an idea. How large of an establishment is it? How many people does it hold?
Oh, I'd say about 200.
Okay, so a fair size, average size pub, you'd say.
Oh, yes, definitely. We have two bars, a pool room, a full menu, and we're open 7 days a week, 24/7. Not 24/7, till 2.
Till 2. And as you say, you started this thing for trivia night, so trivia night is a pretty busy night for you guys. Has this made it even more popular?
I would say so, yep. With the first weekend that we advertised it, we gained a couple thousand new viewers just over the weekend. And, yeah, since then, it's been doing pretty good. Trivia night was always pretty good to begin with. But the other days of the week are a little better. Like I said, they're coming in from all over just to try it. We've even made shirts.
You made shirts? Are you selling these shirts?
We are selling these shirts.
What does the shirt say? I'm sure it has a picture of the drink, but does it have any slogan or anything with it?
It has the picture of our shot with the Molly's logo right on it, and it says, Home of the World Famous Laundry Pod Shot.
Now, I'm assuming, like you say, you've got a lot of calls from bartenders, other places, trying to figure out how to make this drink. Are you concerned that someone's going to steal your thunder and... Or are you always going to be known as the originator of this drink?
Oh, I'm not worried about that at all. The fads come and go. I'm waiting for the next one. We all know where it came from, so I'm waiting for the next big thing.
Getting back to the censorship that Facebook had by pulling your drink, did you expect that to happen? Are you concerned about the fact that it happened? Do you think it's childish that it happened? What were your thoughts when you first heard that they took it down?
My first thoughts were there might have been a... people with nothing better to do than complain about it. I don't understand why it was such a big deal. I really don't understand why it is such a big deal. I have 6.5 million views. Of course, we had a couple haters here and there. And they're upset that we're promoting, I guess, the children doing these things with eating them, but that wasn't the case. It was just supposed to be funny. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I noticed that you have a Twitter feed, but you haven't tweeted anything on your Twitter feed for Molly's. Is that correct?
You know what? I wouldn't know. We have a social media director. He kind of takes care of that. I didn't realize he hasn't tweeted anything.
I realize that no tweets have been put up. Now, after telling you this, hopefully that'll change. Maybe you should try and put it up and see what Twitter does or does not do.
Yeah, why not? I wasn't even aware that he wasn't doing the tweeting, but I'll have to get in touch with him.
Yeah. As of the time of this taping, there's nothing for Molly's Irish Grill and Pub, Sports Pub, on your own Twitter page, and you do have a Twitter page because I found it before I called you.
Okay.
So get on that. Make sure that they put it up.
I will do that. will do.
The thing I find interesting is, I'm sure you're aware of the fact that what's happening in the news in politics with the so-called Russian investigation and everything, and the idea that so many bots are being used to try to influence people on Facebook. Do you find, given the juxtaposition of what's going on in news, that, you know, there are people putting up literally fake news out there trying to get people to vote one way or another, and your Tide Pod Challenge drink is taken down?
I know, it is really, it's ridiculous. It really is. But you can't make everybody happy. It's always, they must have had enough complaints for them to take it down. It's okay, because when they took it down, it just made it that much more popular.
And the trend, the popularity is still continuing weeks later?
Yeah, we're doing pretty good. Mm-hmm.
Now,
they still come in for them.
Now, I'm calling you from Canada. Are you hearing from, as you mentioned, you heard from other people across the United States. Are you hearing from media in far-flung corners of the planet now that you have created this drink?
Ireland.
Of course.
That's Ireland, Canada were the only ones I heard of.
Well.
The rest were in the United States. We had Las Vegas, Florida, Tennessee, everyone.
Have you heard at all from the folks who made Tide Pods?
No, not at all. And I originally, when it was for trivia, we called it the Tide Pod Challenge. And then it took off, and we were like, oh, that's probably a bad idea. So now it's Laundry Pod Shot.
Laundry Pod Shot, okay. So,
yeah.
Again, tell us what it's made from, and what do you charge for one?
It is a blue Baileys and orange dyed vodka, and it's for $4.
Excellent. Well, congratulations on the ingenuity. How much, by the way, do the t-shirts sell for?
The t-shirts are $15.
And do you have to go into your establishment at Molly's Irish Grill and Sports Pub to get the t-shirts, or can some people buy them, for instance, from your website?
That hasn't been brought up to me, but I don't see why not, depending on how much shipping is. I'm sure we could work that out.
Okay. I think you have a little cottage industry here, so get the tweets out and also get the t-shirts up on the website. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. Bye-bye.
Mary Fleming, manager of Molly's Irish Grill and Sports Pub in South Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0445, and you'll find links to their site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
It's trial time!
Ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, coming to you from Montreal, Canada, where we share the longest unprotected border in the world with the United States. Take that as a sign of extreme friendship.
or a warning.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about banning best friends in school. Plus, Stuart Nolman is along with another edition of Book Banter. We do have an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news here on a program that is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, the offense of driving with a suspended license is not uncommon. Officers conducting traffic stops see this kind of thing all the time, and sadly, on this program, it seems that everyone who is stopped for some kind of driving infraction shouldn't be driving in the first place. But this next item does raise the eyebrows to maximum levels with record numbers. A 39-year-old Detroit man who was pulled over after an officer noticed a heavily cracked windshield on the driver's side of the man's vehicle. The driver provided a Michigan identification card, but was unable to produce a driver's license, registration, or proof of insurance. He told the officer his driver's license was suspended. That was an understatement. The Law Enforcement Information Network indicated the man was ineligible to drive due to over 380 current suspensions. His license had expired in 1999. This many suspensions are extremely uncommon, said Wyandotte Deputy Police Chief Archie Hamilton. In fact, I have only seen drivers with more than 100 suspensions a few times in my career, and I've never seen anyone with over 300 suspensions. In addition to the suspensions, the man had 45 active warrants for his arrest. He was arrested for driving on a suspended license. His license plate was confiscated and placed in a bin to be destroyed. You know, when and if he gets out of jail, I'm all for the state giving him a bus pass for free. But in the meantime, while he's in jail, they should force him to make license plates. That would be karmic. And you think these multiple arrests only happen in Michigan? Oh, no. 57-year-old Richard Powell was in court in Miami Beach, Florida, to answer to charges of violating a court order banning him from an area of town. He was found in the middle of a city street yelling, and he had a beer in his hand and marijuana stuffed in his shoes. Powell accepted a plea deal rather than go to trial and was sentenced to 90 days in jail. "You're on the radar, my friend," said Miami-Dade Circuit Court Judge Andrea Ricker Wilson. The judge went on to say, "Essentially, the officers, the residents who live in that area, know who you are, and they will call the police if they see you, and you will be right back here where you are right now." The arrest was Powell's 344th arrest. 344. So now you know what it takes to get a recidivist on the radar in Florida courts. 344. Yeah. North Little Rock, Arkansas law firm celebrated Valentine's Day in an unconventional way. Wilson and Hobart, PLLC, hosted a contest to win a free divorce. A divorce which was valued at $985. "Are you ready to call it quits?" the firm's Facebook post asked. "Do you know someone that is?" Firm co-founder Brandon Hobart said that the firm had received more than 40 entries in the first day it was offered. Ain't love grand? Yeah. Authorities say a Massachusetts trolley driver paid a man $2,000 to attack him while wearing a Halloween mask so that the driver could fraudulently collect workers' compensation and disability insurance. A Suffolk County grand jury indicted Thomas Lucy on charges of insurance fraud, workers' compensation fraud, misleading a police investigation, and perjury. Prosecutors say the Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority driver reported the man pulled him out of a trolley shortly after midnight on October 30, 2016, and punched him repeatedly. The attacker wore a mask and carried a plastic pumpkin. Authorities say they lifted fingerprints from the pumpkin left behind at the scene to find the man, and that he said Lucy paid him for the phony attack. Well, That's a dumb idea gone wrong, but what I want to know is why is the faux assailant carrying a plastic pumpkin? Had he just come back from trick-or-treating before the attack? Yeah. We have time for one more story in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. The feeding habits of a Cooper's hawk may fascinate bird watchers, but employees of a New York bank are fed up with the feathery remnants of slaughtered pigeons. The hawk has been killing and eating pigeons near the entrance of M&T Bank in suburban Syracuse for several weeks. Property manager Joseph Mathlin said that bank staff are terrified and disgusted. Mathlin said the bank tried putting up a fake owl to shoo the hawk away. Jake McGowan of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology says the hawk probably won't care about the owl, but its pigeon prey might be scared off. Colorful crow-sized Cooper's hawks have been common in cities and suburbs where flocks of pigeons and bird feeder visitors make easy pickings. How about that? A bank that doesn't like deposits. Yeah. And you know, I've never been a fan of pigeons, by the way. I don't know what Noah was thinking when he allowed those two on board. They probably just flew in through a window and were stowaways. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Growing up, your best friend is the person who is always there for you and the one you share all your secrets and exploits with. But now there's a growing movement to ban best friends. The movement isn't a ban on friendship. It's just geared towards having children broaden their friendship circles and become more inclusive. It's a move a lot of educators think goes in the right direction. To talk about this, we are joined once again by clinical forensic psychologist Dr. John Huber. He's the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, which is a nonprofit organization, and he joins us on the line right now from Texas. Hi, John.
Hello. How are you, Peter?
Just tickety-boo. So I'll get right to the point. What kind of cockamamie idea is this?
Well, I'm bothered by it. And, you know, I started my career as a school psychologist, so I was in schools. And, you know, I understand what they're trying to do. They're trying to get kids to, you know, broaden their horizons socially. But I think they're going about it the wrong way. I mean, we've already got problems with social media not allowing kids, for whatever reason, we can talk about that too, but for whatever reason, not actually having real personal face-to-face contact with anybody anymore, and they're losing social skills that way. Now you're going to turn around and say, you can't have a best friend, and I don't see how that's going to be productive at all. That's how we learn to have a committed relationship with somebody. Our best friends are the first people we share intimate personal details about our lives, our fears, our worries, the things that make us happy. And now they're going to say, we can't let you do that. So you have to basically live with just acquaintances the rest of your life.
You know, I saw stories about this on television where they were interviewing people who are behind the idea of doing this. Also, a similar situation that took place just recently, just before Valentine's Day. I don't know if you heard about the story of the school in Ogden, Utah, Canesville Elementary School, where there was the sixth grader's Valentine's dance, and the idea was that girls were not allowed to say no when someone asked them to dance. Have you heard
of that? Wow, that's problematic too, because what are you teaching the boys, that the girls always have to say yes to you in social, you know, intimate type interactions, dating situations? I think that's a bad thing to do too.
And I saw the principal of the school, who was a man, who was being interviewed on this and why this rule was in place, and it had been in place for a few years, by the way. And all I kept thinking when I saw this guy is, and I'm probably thinking the same thing about the people who came up with the idea about not having best friends, is these are people who are still working out issues of their own childhood.
And I think you're probably right. I haven't assessed them, so I can't say that for sure. But a lot of times, that's what adults do. We project our own issues onto the people we have some control and authority over. So that is a big possibility.
How do you even prevent people from being best friends? That's what I want to know.
Well, you know, you would do it by telling them they have to sit by people they don't really know very well. And, of course, you're talking about an undeveloped mind that, you know, doesn't mature until it's mid-20s, and you're forcing them to do something that they don't want to do. It's just a plan for destruction. I mean, the kids will fight it. They won't like it. They're going to make enemies, not friends, because if they throw enough of a fit and they're fighting all the time, the adults will have no choice but to separate them, right? Well, that's how kids think. So I don't see this as going to be a good thing in the long run. Again, we're already missing social skills that you and I developed because we didn't have social media.
Well, I want to bring up that point. I mean, I work in a business that admittedly deals with ratings. And what are ratings but other than a way of saying these many people like you? They, you know, to paraphrase Sally Field, they like me. They really, really like me. Okay. And yet I understand that not everybody is going to like me, nor should they. So this is something I learned in school only because there are some people in school who didn't like me, and heaven forbid, there are some people in school I didn't like.
That is a big lesson in life that everybody needs to learn. Everybody needs to learn. And if you're told that you have to like everybody else and become friends, which aren't, you know, they're not, it's not really a friend, it's an acquaintance, somebody you're familiar with. Not any kind of deep interpersonal relationship at all. It's just, again, it's setting people up for failure later in life. What happens when, hey, I've known this person for 3 days, let's get married, you know? And, well, I knew you as good as, well, I never had a best friend. So, you know, how many times do you hear people who are married and have lived, you know, 40, 50 years together, and they say the secret was I married my best friend? They knew how to communicate, and they learned that earlier in life before they met each other.
I guess the bottom line is, and I, as a clinician, as a scientist, people can debate this. If you created a utopia, if you created a perfect world for children through their entire school years, aren't you really setting them up for a fall in adulthood?
Well, and we've already seen that. I mean, look what's happened from the non-competitive sports thing where everybody gets a trophy. And we've got kids now where, you know, the millennials have the highest suicide attempt rate of any previous generation before them. And they have one of the highest at college level. 1 in 5 of them are seeking help for depression and anxiety because they don't have skills to deal with being independent. It is definitely setting us up for more problems.
I don't want to tag on and pile on to a situation that is already bad enough, but do you foresee some of these ideas, generally speaking, that creep into schools and the way they try to raise children in a collective grouping in schools, do you see that it could lead to a situation, dare I say, that we saw played out recently in a school shooting, for instance?
Well, now think about it. I mean, what are some of the things that would have stopped this individual from going in there? As if he had a close personal friend in there that he felt committed to, he wouldn't want to harm them. That's part of that best friend mentality, and it may have prevented this situation. He was kind of a loner and an oddball, and he'd lost both his parents. There were a lot of stressors involved, and he didn't have a good friend, a close friend. So he felt very isolated and alone, and he was angry at the world, and he took action against that.
But what I'm saying, too, is the fact that we have a situation where we're trying to make school a perfect situation, and when you try to do that, the pressures that might come from the outside world, these kids aren't prepared for.
They are not prepared for, and then internally, he didn't have the internal justification to not move forward with this. And I mean, every time I hear this utopia thing, I think of things like the Stepford Wives. I mean, look at that situation. The wives were all perfect, perfectly trained. Yeah, right. You know, It's pretty scary.
Okay, so going back to this best friend things, again, you are a clinical forensic psychologist. You have children. They're not as young anymore. We've talked about this in the past. But if they were, if they were, and their school came and sent out a notice saying, we're not allowed to have best friends, what would you do as a parent?
Well, first thing I would do as a parent is I would go and sit down and talk with the administrator at that school, and knowing that it wasn't going to change there, but I would talk with them first. Then I would end up in front of the school board with that memo, with that letter, and I would do a little bit of research, get the actual studies about how we learn to develop intimate relationships with each person, and present that to the school board. And at that point, if nothing happens, which, you know, those guys are elected, so what's the first thing you do when you get elected is you start working on your reelection campaign, and I would be throwing that in their face. And if I didn't get the results I wanted, I would ask for, you know, here in Texas we have lots of options. I can, without any extra cost or anything, actually transfer my kid to another school district, a surrounding school district. There's a couple of them that require you to apply, but there's a couple of them that absolutely don't. They'll take your child. You just have to get them there. And I would be seriously looking at that. We also have magnet schools and charter schools, and I would be looking at all my options, because I know that's not a healthy way to grow up. Having best friends is, like you said, it's more like reality. We always have people that we gravitate to because we like the same music, we like the same sports, because we both like Italian food, whatever it is. You know, you find those hooks, and it teaches you, hey, I don't like to sit and watch soccer for the length of the game. I don't mind playing it, but I don't want to watch it, but I can sit there and watch basketball the whole time. So I would gravitate to friends who also like to watch basketball, because I'm not going to go over to somebody else's house and watch soccer.
I'm wondering, with one school saying you can't have best friends, with another school saying you can't say no at a dance, girls can't say no, I'm now curious to see just what's coming next.
Well, I'm thinking you can't turn anybody down as a friend on social media apps, so you have to accept everybody.
Wow. It's becoming a scary world. I say that often. John, which is why I always come to you, John.
I appreciate that. But, you know, it is a scary world. And as adults, our job is to teach kids how to function within that. And if all we do is put up fences around them, and then when they turn 18, we open the gate and let them walk out the door, they have not learned any skills other than run and hide.
Yeah. John, I thank you once again for being on the program with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's a great show, and I'm glad to be part of the Stuff File.
And we're glad to have you. That was Dr. John Huber, Chairman for Mainstream Mental Health. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0445. And you'll find links to John's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Many years ago, high school teachers across the United States discovered a fun new way to teach physics and biology. By using little round magnets, they could create 3D models that helped their students visualize what they were trying to teach. Then, a few years ago, a government agency banned the little magnets. It claimed that since children could swallow them if left unsupervised, no one in America should be able to use them, no matter what their age. The magnets were removed from schools, and the companies that made them went out of business. It was a clear case of government overreach, and a federal court eventually overturned the ban. Let's be fair, though. It's become common to hear about government agencies usurping the power of Congress. So, when the new acting director of a federal agency recently declared that his office will no longer go beyond the statutory mandate given to it by Congress, it was news. Learn more about Director Mick Mulvaney's groundbreaking decision at centerforamericatv.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And joining us indeed is Stuart Nauman with another edition of Book Banter. Hi, Stu.
Hi, Peter. You look great in that sort of frippy hairdo and the... And are you calling me fake news also? You didn't call me fake news now?
No, I wouldn't call you fake news, although people can look at my website and see that I have no hair, so let them decide.
You know, on this edition of Book Banter, I'm going to talk about the book that, you know, in this young year of 2018 is now the hottest book of the year so far, and that's Fire and Fury by Michael Wolff. But there's one little thing when you notice the book in the first place about how indicative this, this revolving door that's the Trump White House. There's a photo in the back cover of the book, and there's Trump on the phone with Vice President Pence and surrounded by his circle of advisors and staff, which includes Chief of Staff Ryan Priebus, strategist Steve Bannon, Press Secretary Sean Spicer, and National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. And since the book was published back in January, only two people still have their jobs. And you know who they are? You guessed it. Trump and Pence. Now, this is indicative, I said before, the unpredictable world of executive power that is prevalent through the narrative of Wolff's book, which, thanks to a lot of searing advance publicity, not only compelled the publisher to push up the publication date by 4 days, but immediately shot up to the number one position on the New York Times bestseller list, and to this day still possesses that number one spot. Now, after reading this scorcher of a behind-the-scenes account, one thing is clear to me, and that Fire and Fury may not exactly create the same powerful after effect to Donald Trump that Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward's 1-2 journalistic punch of all the president's men and the final days had on Richard Nixon as a result of Watergate, but it comes pretty darn close. And when you finish reading this book, one thing is frighteningly clear: this is a White House in a harrowing state of disarray, or to put it bluntly, a mess.
Yeah, but you brought up Woodward and Bernstein. I'm just curious to know if you believe that... Are you equating the journalistic skills of Woodward and Bernstein to that of,
Michael Wolff?
Exactly.
No, just to the effect that their book had on their subject, basically. So it may not bring about the downfall of Trump, like the way Woodward and Bernstein's two books did, but, the way things are going, it could be pretty darn close. It could be a catalyst. That's my argument.
Okay.
Okay. Now, Wolff did conduct more than 200 interviews with a number of senior staffers and, yes, the president himself. And the end result of this indefatigable interviewing and research is a narrative that will have small L liberals and rabid anti-Trump people wringing their hands with delight. Now, one of the main reasons for the state of disarray in the Trump White House is the result of a three-way power struggle between the following factions with the sole purpose occurring and winning the president's undivided attention for their respective agendas. There's former chief strategist Steve Bannon, who wanted to get Trump's ear so he could pull the strings and run the White House with his governing concept of Trumpism-Bannonism. Then there was Ryan's Priebus and Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, who wanted to reach out to Trump with a more traditional Washington-style legislative agenda. And the duo of daughter Ivanka and son-in-law Jared Kushner, who is dubbed, and it's prevalent in the book, called Jarvanka, who firmly believed that the president would rather listen to the council of family members than someone outside the Trump lineage who possessed more government or political experience. Now, who's this person they tried to curry favor with? This is a person who has a short attention span, who didn't listen to his close circle advisors, who in turn didn't even ever have a clear definition of their roles in the White House to begin with, and rarely read his briefing books, had no patience for high-level meetings and left them early, and was always fishing for compliments that would boost his growing ego. And even spent evenings in his bedroom watching TV, writing tweets, and conducting a constant series of phone calls with friends in order to get more self-serving compliments. Now, after the pre-publication controversies and blurring headlines, the string of books that are about to be released throughout the year dealing with the 2016 election and the Trump White House, there's even one that's coming up by former FBI Director James Comey, and not to mention the growing Russia probe and the continuing examples of Trump's unpredictability, people should just realize the importance of Fire and Fury as being the first book to open their eyes to what really goes on in the Trump White House, and hopefully they will come to these two conclusions as a result that this is not how a person should conduct themselves as President of the United States, and this is certainly not the way to govern a country that was built on the principles of democracy and freedom.
Michael Wolff makes the president sound like the king from the Bud Light commercials. I'm surprised there's nowhere in the book where he mentions Dilly Dilly.
Maybe that's in the second book. We don't know that. Or in the paperback edition. Who knows? I mean, but this has started a whole tidal wave of Trump books or Trump White House books that's coming up within the coming year in the publishing industry. So there's more to come about this one. It ain't over.
Do you question any of, that's why I asked the Woodward and Bernstein question earlier, do you question any of Michael Wolff's, for lack of a better term, journalistic qualities when it comes to sometimes stretching the truth a little bit, which he has known to do? Let me just put it this way. I've always thought of Michael Wolff as a modern day Katie Kelly.
Oh, really? That's an interesting, allusion, a comparison. But you know what? I mean, hey, look, he was just lucky to get that all access to the White House and just be almost like a fly in the wall, sitting on a couch in the West Wing. I expected something like Bob Woodward to do something of this nature first. But I guess Michael Wolff just beat him to the punch and just got darn lucky to get that access.
By the way, I don't think he was lucky. I think they were just that stupid. that's just what it is. It's like, really? I mean, there was no luck involved. I don't think the time that he was in there, he must have been jumping up and down on the inside saying, I can't believe they let me in this place.
Yeah, and then he goes, you know, I can't believe this is all happening. I can't believe, you know, it's like the lunatics running the asylum here.
Exactly. Anyway, the book is?
It's called Fire and Fury by Michael Wolff. It's published by Henry Holt, and it's $39.
And what other books do you recommend in this genre, sir?
Well, I do recommend the before-mentioned books by Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, the groundbreaking books of All the President's Men, which was how they broke the Watergate scandal, and The Final Days, which is how, how it was in Nixon White House in the days leading up to his resignation. And also on a Canadian point of view, I do recommend Stevie Cameron's runaway bestseller, On the Take, which dealt with the corruption that plagued the Mulroney administration for 9 years. And that also became a huge bestseller thanks to some interesting advanced publicity.
Excellent. And this week's book again is?
Fire and Fury by Michael Wolff. It's published by Henry Holt, and it's $39.
And how can people find you, sir? I'm assuming not lurking around in the corners of the Oval Office, because, you know, the Oval Office has no corners.
No. That would be very confusing and frustrating, I'll tell you that. No,
I'm sure it's very confusing and frustrating for the occupant.
Oh, yeah. Surprised he's found his way out of that Oval Office to begin with.
But many are wondering how he found his way in, but that's another story entirely.
Yeah, it's another story altogether, and probably another book. But you can find me on the pages, in the pages of the Montreal Times every week, published every Saturday, or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stuart.
Well, thank you, Peter. Now, if you must excuse me, I must catch my plane to Mar-a-Lago. I have a golf date with the Donald over there.
Okay. Watch out for him in those shorts. Stuart Nellman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way. And I have a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you right here, right now. But since we just did Book Banter, just another subliminal message. Buy my book, Great Conversations. Amazon, 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 Amazon. Buy, Amazon. The trail for a new Richmond, Wisconsin man who allegedly bolted from authorities went cold. Too cold, in fact, according to court records. A criminal complaint against Kenneth R. Schutz Jr. states that he ran from a February 6th traffic stop, but eventually called 911 to report he was so cold that he needed an ambulance. Officers eventually found Schutz in the middle of a frozen swamp in rural Star Prairie, where he reported he couldn't walk as the temperature dropped below zero. The effort required fire and rescue assistance to remove Schutz from the area described as being surrounded by steep terrain and dense woods. Schutz was later charged in St. Croix County Circuit Court with three misdemeanors stemming from the incident: failure to obey an officer, marijuana possession, and obstructing an officer. Wow. Running from the cops in sub-zero night into the woods usually isn't going to end very well. I wonder what kind of footwear he was wearing. Hope it wasn't flip-flops or sandals. I wonder how many toes he still has. Anyway, when the city gets to be too much for Joe and Lonnie Harrison of Houston, Texas, they escape to their prefab vacation cabin nestled on a 10-acre plot in Madisonville, Texas. Well, having last visited the property in November, Lonnie set out on February 2nd to check on it. But when he arrived, he didn't see the house. Said Lonnie, "All I saw were blocks and pipes sticking out. The whole house was gone." Sergeant Larry Shriver of the Madison County Sheriff's Department later said, "I've never had a house reported stolen in my career yet." The house was found a few days later, having been repossessed from the previous owner. And yes, I know it's always important to lock your doors when you leave, but perhaps you should start locking down your foundation, too. Yeah. Anyway, amazingly, 30-year-old Adam St. Clair didn't get any prison time for his scheme. St. Clair stole textbooks, electronics, and other items from West Virginia's University of Charleston, where he was a student, then sold the items on his Amazon store, which he called Robin Hood Literature. U.S. District Judge Joseph Goodwin sentenced St. Clair to pay $6,271 in restitution and to serve 5 years of probation, during which time Goodwin suggested he calibrate his moral compass. The crime became a federal matter because St. Clair shipped the stolen goods using the Postal Service. He has been expelled from the school. Gee. Now that his education has been curtailed, I wonder which profession he might best be suited for. The mind boggles. Gee, I hope he isn't running for anything. In Dresden, Germany, police reported that two men were injured on January 15th after hitting each other with their cars in consecutive accidents. The first man, who is 49 years old, pulled into a handicapped parking spot, then saw his mistake and backed out, accidentally hitting a 72-year-old man walking behind the car. The two men exchanged information for a report. Then the older man got into his car and reversed out of his parking spot, hitting the younger man. Both men suffered only slight injuries. See, this is exactly the reason why I always back into a parking spot, never drive in. I'm just saying. And by the way, this is going to be a rather interesting insurance claim when all is said and done, don't you think? Yeah, so do I. Anyway, it's time, boys and girls, for the moment you've all been waiting for. Yes, it's time once again for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff all presents the Idiot of the Day.
Marion County, Florida sheriff's officials were surprised to get a text from 52-year-old David W. Romig on January 30th about a murder scene at his home in Dunellen. Detectives were called to the home after Romig reported an intruder had killed his girlfriend, 64-year-old Sally Kaufman Ruff. Some of the evidence they found didn't match Romig's story, and their suspicions were confirmed later in the day when Romig texted a detective saying, "I think they are going to arrest me," a text he meant to send to his wife. On February 12th, Romig admitted he may have killed Kaufman Ruff. He was charged with homicide, making a false report, and tampering with evidence. Now, why, oh why, would you want to send a text to your wife? Your wife! About being arrested for the death of your girlfriend? Let me repeat that. Send a text to your wife about being arrested for the death of your girlfriend, but then you actually send that text to the police instead of your wife? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0445. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0445. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.